Monday, October 14th, I went in Lyndon's room early. He had come in from Texas very late last night. I was told it was about 2 o'clock. But this time, he did not look rested from his trip home. In fact, I have never seen him look nearer the end of his resources, more worn and worried. He said something like this while he was getting dressed. You know, when we got out of this in March, I said it was because I didn't know whether I could make it through another 4 years or not. Now, I don't know whether I can make it through another 3 months. And then he looked at me as though reaching for some comfort, which I did not have, and said, I may have one of the hardest decisions of all to make today. I went to the swimming pool and had 30 laps, and then to Jean-Louis for a hair treatment. Zephyr sent me a hamburger, which I had under the dryer, along with signing letters. I was back at the White House by 2 to go to the Lincoln sitting room for tea with Jean Hughes, who had been my daddy's nurse in his last long illness. A sweet, cheerful brunette, warm-hearted and feminine. She had eased his days considerably, and I wanted to express my appreciation. She had 3 friends with her. We had tea and sweets and reminisced about Marshall and Karnak and Daddy. And then she handed me some pictures, last that were ever made of Daddy, on a trip where she'd accompanied him down into the valley, one of his rare relaxations, his own search for Shangri-La. I had arranged a tour for them of the rest of the house. Marcia and Sharon came to see me, and we had a session on the preservation luncheon, which I have set my heart on having shine as one of my best parties here. I had a long talk with Dr. Lonergan about Linda Bird. He's very agile about not being pinned down, but after some persistence, he said he thought it would probably be between the 20th and 26th. He would be very surprised if it went into November. And then I had for tea in the Yellow Oval Room the officers of a National Association of Food Chains, some 16 or so couples representing the big food companies. One of the officers and hosts is my friend Joseph Danzansky, who works very hard on beautification in Washington and has landscaped at least 2 of his own giant food stores quite handsomely. This was a way for me to say thank you to him, and also, hopefully, to call the attention, perhaps impress, his fellow presidents of big food chains with the civic pride and the interest of environment of this man who ran businesses just like theirs. I made it just as personal and warm as I could, and it really was a very pleasant 45 minutes before I started them off on the rest of the tour, and then went back myself to the West Hall a little late for a meeting with Dr. Grover and Sharon about the library, with Dr. Grover to talk about the oral history program and to cue in with Sharon when and how the films are going to be finished, which is becoming one of our major problems in the library. In the middle of our talk, the door opened from the dining room and Lyndon emerged, bringing with him Senator Russell. Inside, I stiffened. Lyndon summoned me with a look and a hearty word. I came over and greeted the senator pleasantly, coolly. Oddly, he took my hand and leaned over and kissed it with a rather self-conscious word. This is something I picked up in Europe. It was strange behavior for both of us. For so long, he has been the guiding star in the Senate for Lyndon. Perhaps he still is, but I do not any longer share that feeling. It has been a one-way street for too long, all the devotion and loyalty on Lyndon's side. Oddly, I find it impossible to feel rancor or pain towards somebody unless I have loved them first. Lyndon said, thank you for spending so much time with me. Is that odd for a president to say to a senator? It is the measure of the respect in which he still holds Senator Russell. I had at least an hour and a half session with Dr. Grover. The library, the films, are consuming so much of my last month here, and well worth it, I think. I only wish I had started harder on the library 2 years ago. And then to the bowling lanes for 2 swift games, and back upstairs for a couple of hours of desk work, phoning our house guests first, Father Snyder and the Truesdale's. But in the meantime, Jim Kane had arrived to tell them that we'd love to have them join us for dinner if they could hold out until that uncertain hour when Lyndon arrived. I invited them down about 9, and we had a drink and talked. And it was 10 o'clock when Lyndon came in, bearing the strain of the day on his face. But he always manages somehow, when he gets out of the elevator, to assume a sort of a jaunty walk, as though he wants to reassure those of us who are looking to him. He talks about the poverty program, especially the Head Start program, that he hopes Mr. Truesdale will be able to set up for the community of Stonewall, extending possibly as far as Johnson City. And he keeps on trying to draw Father Snyder into it. It is really funny. He has little knowledge or interest in the divisions between different churches, and insists on putting them all together. As soon as we had finished, and by now it was about 11:15, he said, "Well, I'm going to bed early because I want to be awake at midnight." That is when the cables from Saigon come in. So whatever was afoot was still afoot and undecided, and the tension strung out, and the miracle of the day was that it wasn't already in the headline. I thought of what Lyndon said this morning about the story in the Sunday paper. Mac George Bundy, one of the original architects of U.S. policy in the Vietnamese War, called yesterday for an unconditional bombing halt. In a puzzled way, Lyndon had said, "I wonder what a man like Bundy thinks he gets out of it, that it affects the course of events, or he gets approbation at his club, or he gets a little of this stuff off of him." I suppose he means a little of Mac George's former backing of the war. The statement had made me sad, and I wondered if it could actually affect the minds of negotiators for Hanoi, hold their hand, determine their decisions by just one jot or tittle. This week, tomorrow, is the halfway mark in the time that our boys will be gone. 6 months from tomorrow, God willing, Chuck will come home, and Patrick will already be here. What a lot of counting I've done in this job.